Bilbo had escaped the goblins, but he did not know where he was. He wandered on and on till the sun began to sink westwards and the mountain shadows fell across his path. Good heavens, I seem to have got right to the other side of the Misty Mountains, right to the edge of the land beyond. Where and oh where can Gandalf and the dwarves have got to? He had just made up his mind that he must turn back when he heard voices, and suddenly he saw peering between two big boulders a head with a red hood. It was Balin, keeping lookout. He could have jumped for joy, but he didn't. He had still got the ring on, and he saw that Balin was looking straight through him. Gandalf was arguing with the dwarves, saying that they could not possibly go on their journey, leaving Mr. Baggins in the hand of the goblins, without trying to rescue him. Either you help me look for him, or I go and leave you here to get out of this mess as best you can yourselves. Whatever did you want to go and drop him for, Dory? You would have dropped him if a goblin had suddenly grabbed you from behind in the dark. Then why didn't you pick him up again? What? With goblins fighting and biting in the dark? You nearly chopped off my head with Glamdring. Then all of a sudden you gave one of your blinding flashes and shouted, "Follow me, everybody." We thought everybody had. And here we are, without the burglar. Confusticate him.
And here's the burglar, said Bilbo, slipping off the ring. Bless me, how they jumped and shouted with surprise and delight.
What did I tell you? Said Gandalf, laughing. Mr. Baggins has more about him than you guess.
Nevertheless, he gave Bilbo a queer look from under his bushy eyebrows, and the hobbit wondered if he guessed at the part of his tale that he had left out. The wizard called them to their senses.
They will be out after us in hundreds when night comes, and already shadows are lengthening. They can smell our footsteps for hours. We are too far to the north, and we are still pretty high up. Let's get on.
All of a sudden, they heard a long, shuddering howl. It was wolves gathering together.
What shall we do? What shall we do? Bilbo cried. Escaping goblins to be caught by wolves.
Up the trees, quick! Cried Gandalf.
Bilbo could not get into any tree, and was scuttling about from trunk to trunk like a frightened rabbit.
You've left the burglar behind again, said Nori to Dory, looking down. Well, I can't always be carrying burglars on my back. What do you think I am, a porter?
The howls came closer. He'll be eaten if we don't do something, said Thorin. Dory, be quick and give Mr. Baggins a hand up.
Dory climbed out of the tree and let Bilbo scramble up and stand on his back.
Just at that moment, the wolves howled into the clearing. All of a sudden, there were hundreds of yellow eyes. Still, Dory did not let Bilbo down. He waited till he had clambered off his shoulders into the branches, and then he jumped for his life. Only just in time. A wolf snapped at his cloak as he swung up and nearly got him. Then there were all around eyes blazing through the dark. But even the wild wargs, for so the evil wolves were named, cannot climb trees. For a time, Bilbo and his friends were safe. The glade in the ring of trees was a wolf meeting place. More and more kept coming in, forming a great circle. And in the middle of the circle sat a great grey wolf. He spoke to them in the dreadful language of the wargs. Gandalf understood it. Bilbo did not. But it sounded terrible. What Gandalf heard was that a great goblin raid had been planned for that same night. The wargs had come to meet the goblins, and the goblins were late. The reason, no doubt, was the death of the great goblin, and all the excitement caused by the dwarves and Bilbo and the wizard, for whom they were probably still hunting. The wargs were angry and puzzled at finding the dwarves here in their own meeting place. They had no intention of letting them escape. And long before morning, goblin soldiers would be coming down from the mountains. And goblins can climb trees. Gandalf began to be dreadfully afraid, wizard though he was. He gathered some huge pine cones from the branches of his tree, set one alight with bright blue fire, and threw it whizzing down among the circle of the wolves. It struck one on the back, and immediately his shaggy coat caught fire, and he was yelping horribly. Then another came, and another, one in blue flames, another in green.
Soon all about the glade, wolves were rolling over and over to put out the sparks on their backs, while those that were burning set others alight, till their own friends chased them away, and they fled. The dwarves and Bilbo cheered.
"What is all this uproar in the forest tonight?"
said the Lord of the Eagles. He was sitting, black in the moonlight, on a lonely pinnacle of rock at the eastern edge of the mountains.
"I hear wolves' voices."
He summoned many other eagles to him, and they flew from the mountains, and slowly circling, they came down, down, down towards the ring of the wolves and the meeting place of the goblins. Dreadful things had been going on. The wolves that had caught fire and fled into the forest had set it alight in several places. All round the clearing of the wargs, fire was leaping, but the wolf guards did not leave the trees. Goblins had arrived. And goblins are not afraid of fire. They soon had a plan which seemed to them most amusing. Stacking fern and brushwood round the tree trunks, soon they had a ring of smoke and flame all around the dwarves. Smoke was in Bilbo's eyes. He could feel the heat of the flames, and through the reek he could see the goblins dancing round and round in a circle like people round a midsummer bonfire. Outside the ring of dancing goblin warriors stood the wolves, watching and waiting. He could hear the goblins beginning a horrible song. 15 birds in 5 fir trees, their feathers were fanned in a fiery breeze, but funny little birds, they had no wings. Oh, what shall we do with the funny little things? Roast them alive, or stew them in a pot, fry them, boil them, and eat them hot. Ya hey, ya hurry hey, yahoy! And with that yahoy, the flames were under Gandalf's tree. In a moment it spread to the others. The bark caught fire. The lower branches cracked. Just at that moment, the Lord of the Eagles swept down from above, seized Gandalf in his talons, and was gone. There was a howl of rage and surprise from the goblins. Loud cried the Lord of the Eagles. Back swept the great birds, and down they came like huge black shadows, their talons tearing at goblin faces. Other birds flew to the treetops and seized the dwarves, who were scrambling high as they ever dared go. Poor little Bilbo was very nearly left behind again. He just managed to catch hold of Dory's legs as Dory was borne off last of all, and up they went, swinging in the air. The flight ended only just in time for him before his arms gave way and he fell with a gasp onto the rough platform of an eagle's eyrie. He lay trembling with fear on a wide shelf of rock on the mountainside. There was no path down onto it save by flying. The Lord of the Eagles was speaking to Gandalf. Bilbo listened to the talk and realized that at last they were going to escape from the dreadful mountains. Gandalf was discussing plans with the great eagle for carrying them far away and setting them all down well on their journey across the plains below. The next morning, Bilbo woke up with the early sun in his eyes. This time, he was allowed to climb onto an eagle's back and cling tightly between his wings. The air rushed over him, and he shut his eyes. Hours later, the eagles circled down in great spirals, swooping one by one to set down their passengers.
"Farewell," they cried, "till your eyries receive you at the journey's end."
The party gathered and discussed what was to be done. "I always meant to see you all safe over the mountains," said the wizard, "and now by good management and good luck I have done it. I may look in on you again before it is all over, but I have some other pressing business to attend to." The dwarves groaned and looked most distressed, and Bilbo wept.
"But not yet. I can give you a day or two more. Very few people live in these parts, but there is somebody that I know of who lives not far away. He is a very great person. You must all be very polite and careful not to annoy him. He can be appalling when he is angry, though he is kind enough if humored. Sometimes he is a huge black bear. Sometimes he is a great, strong, black-haired man with huge arms and a great beard. I cannot tell you much more, but that his name is Bjorn, though that ought to be enough."
They came to a high thorn hedge, through which you could neither see nor scramble. But there was a wooden gate, beyond which they could see gardens and a cluster of low wooden buildings. Standing near was a huge man with a thick black beard and hair.
"Who are you? What do you want?"
he asked gruffly.
"I am Gandalf," said the wizard.
"Never heard of him. And what's this little fellow?"
"This is Mr. Baggins, a hobbit of good family and unimpeachable reputation."
Bilbo bowed.
"Well, what do you want?"
"To tell you the truth, we have lost our luggage and nearly lost our way, and are rather in need of help."
Gandalf told of the trolls and the goblins. When he came to the wolves, Beorn got up and strode about and muttered,
"I wish I had been there. I would have given them more than fireworks."
By the time the wizard had got to the eagles, the sun had fallen behind the peaks of the Misty Mountains.
"A very good tale," said Beorn. "The best I have heard for a long while. Now, let's have something to eat."
The light of the torches and the fire flickered about them as they ate, and Beorn in his deep, rolling voice told tales of the wild lands and especially of the dark and terrible forest of Mirkwood that lay outstretched before them, barring their way to the east. Suddenly, up stood Gandalf.
"It is time for us to sleep," he said. "For us, but not, I think, for Beorn. In this hall we can rest sound and safe, but I warn you all not to forget what Beorn has said. You must not stray outside until the sun is up, on your peril."
Bilbo found that beds had already been laid at the side of the hall. For him there was a little mattress of straw and woolen blankets. He snuggled into them very gladly and fell asleep. Yet in the night he woke. There was a growling noise outside, as of some great animal scuffling at the door. Bilbo wondered what it was, and whether it could be Beorn in enchanted shape, and if he would come in as a bear and kill them. He dived under the blankets and hid his head and fell asleep again. Next morning, they were wakened by Beorn himself. He picked up the hobbit and laughed.
"Not eaten up by wargs or goblins or wicked bears yet, I see."
Beorn was most jolly for a change. He had been over the river and right back up into the mountains and caught a warg and a goblin wandering in the woods. From these, he had got news. The goblin patrols were still hunting with wargs for the dwarves.
"It was a good story, that of yours," said Beorn. "But I like it still better now I am sure that it is true. I shall think more kindly of dwarves after this." "Killed the great goblin. Killed the great goblin," he chuckled fiercely to himself.
"What did you do with the goblin and the warg?" asked Bilbo suddenly.
"Come and see."
A goblin's head was stuck outside the gate, and a warg skin was nailed to a tree just beyond. Beorn was a fierce enemy. But now he was their friend, and Gandalf thought it wise to tell him their whole story.
"The way through Mirkwood is dark, dangerous, and difficult. I will give you skins for carrying water, I will give you bows and arrows, and I will give you a word of warning. Don't stray from the path. That you must not do for any reason. At the gate of the forest, I must ask you to send back my horse and my ponies. But I wish you all speed, and my house is always open to you."
Next day they started before dawn. As soon as it was light, they could see the forest coming to meet them, waiting for them, like a black frowning wall. Silence began to draw in upon them.
"Well, here is Mirkwood," said Gandalf. "I hope you like the look of it. Now you must send back these excellent ponies. Beorn may be your friend, but he loves his animals."
"What about the horse, then?" said Thorin. "You don't mention sending that back."
"I don't, because I am not sending it."
"What about your promise, then?"
"I will look after that. I am not sending the horse back. I am riding it."
Then they knew that Gandalf was going to leave them at the very edge of Mirkwood, and they were in despair.
"It is no use arguing. I have some pressing business away south, and I am already late, and I am sending Mr. Baggins with you. I have told you before that he has more about him than you guess, so cheer up. Think of the treasure at the end, and forget the forest and the dragon, at any rate, until tomorrow morning." Goodbye to you all. Straight through the forest is your way now. Keep to the track. If you don't, 1,000 to 1 you will never get out of Mirkwood and see the long marshes. Never mind see the lonely mountain or Smaug, though I hope he is not expecting you. Goodbye then, said Gandalf. Then they heard his voice come faintly. Remember, don't leave the path.
Oh, goodbye and go away, grunted the dwarves,
angry and afraid at losing him. Now began the most dangerous part of all the journey. Each one shouldered his heavy pack and waterskin and turned from the light that lay on the lands outside and plunged into the forest. They walked in single file. The entrance to the path was like a sort of arch leading into a gloomy tunnel. There were queer noises, grunts, scufflings, and hurryings in the undergrowth. The nastiest things they saw were the cobwebs. Dark, thick cobwebs stretched from tree to tree. Before long, they grew to hate the forest as heartily as they had hated the tunnels of the goblins. But they had to go on and on. The nights were the worst. It became pitch dark. Bilbo tried flapping his hand in front of his nose, but he could not see it at all. Well, perhaps it is not true to say that they could see nothing. They could see eyes. They slept all closely huddled together and took it in turns to watch. When it was Bilbo's turn, he would see gleams in the darkness round them, and sometimes pairs of yellow or red or green eyes would stare at him from a little distance, and then slowly fade and disappear. At times they heard disquieting laughter. Sometimes there was singing in the distance, too. The laughter was the laughter of fair voices, not of goblins, and the singing was beautiful, but eerie and strange. And so they hurried on. Bilbo was in deep thoughts of bacon and eggs and toast and butter, when he felt something touch him. Something like a strong, sticky string was against his left hand, and when he tried to move, he found that his legs were trapped. The great spider, who had been tying him up while he dozed, came from behind him. He could only see the thing's eyes, but he could feel its hairy legs as it struggled to wind its abominable threads round and round him. Bilbo attacked it before it could disappear, and stuck it with his sword right in the eyes. It went mad, and leapt, and danced, and flung out its legs in horrible jerks, until he killed it with another stroke, and then fell down, and remembered no more. The dim grey light of the forest day was about him when he came to his senses. The spider lay dead beside him, and his sword blade was stained black. Somehow the killing of the giant spider, all alone, by himself, in the dark, without the help of the wizard or the dwarves or of anyone else, made a great difference to Mr. Baggins. He felt a different person, and much fiercer and bolder, in spite of an empty stomach. He wiped his sword on the grass and put it back into its sheath. I will give you a name, he said to it. I shall call you Stim. The forest was grim and silent, but he felt it was unsafe to shout, and stood a long while wondering in what direction the path lay, and in what direction he should go first to look for the dwarves. Hobbits are clever at quietness, especially in woods. Also, Bilbo had slipped on his ring before he started. That is why the spiders neither saw nor heard him coming. He noticed a black shadow ahead of him, blacker even than the forest, like a patch of midnight that had never been cleared away. He crept nearer and saw spider webs, one tangled with another. And there they were, spiders, huge and horrible, sitting in the branches above him. And ring or no ring, he trembled with fear lest they should discover him. He realized that these loathsome creatures were speaking to one another. What nasty thick skins they have, to be sure, but I'll wager there is good juice inside. Aye, they'll make fine eating when they've hung a bit, said another. Don't hang them too long, said a third. They're not as fat as they might be. Been feeding none too well of late, I should guess.
Kill him, I say, hissed a fourth. Kill him now and hang him dead for a while.
Bilbo was horrified to see one of the fat spiders run along a rope till it came to a dozen bundles hanging in a row from a high branch, and dangling in the shadows, a dwarvish foot sticking out of the bottom of one of the bundles. He had to do something. He could not get up at the brutes, but he was a pretty fair shot with a stone, and it did not take him long to find a nice, smooth, egg-shaped one that fitted his hand cosily. While he was picking up stones,
The spider had reached Bomber, and soon he would have been dead. At that moment, Bilbo threw. The stone struck the spider plunk on the head, and it dropped senseless off the tree, flop, to the ground. Whack! Dead. He started to lead the furious spiders further and further away from the dwarves, making them curious, excited, and angry all at once. Dancing among the trees, he began to sing a song to infuriate them and bring them all after him, and also to let the dwarves hear his voice. Old fat spider spinning in a tree. Old fat spider can't see me. Addercop, addercop, won't you stop? Stop your spinning and look for me. Old Tom Noddy, old big body. Old Tom Noddy can't spy me. Addercop, addercop, you'll never catch me up your tree. All the spiders in the place came after him. They were frightfully angry. Quite apart from the stones, no spider has ever liked being called Addercop. And Tom Noddy is, of course, insulting to anybody. They followed him into the forest until he had gone as far as he dared. Then, quieter than a mouse, he stole back. Now to get them out of those bundles, he said. He managed, by leaning over, to cut most of the strong, sticky threads, and then, sure enough, with a kick and a struggle, most of Feely emerged. In this way, he rescued Keely, Bifor, Bofor, Dory, and Nori. While this was going on, the other dwarves were working at the rest of the captives and cutting at the threads with their knives. Soon all would be free. But then what? The spiders were coming back, and there looked like being a horrible battle. It looked pretty hopeless. Then the battle began. Some of the dwarves had knives, some had sticks, and all of them could get at stones, and Bilbo had his elvish dagger. Again and again the spiders were beaten off, and many of them were killed. But it could not go on for long. Bilbo was nearly tired out. Already the spiders were beginning to weave their webs all round them again, from tree to tree. In the end, Bilbo could think of no plan except to let the dwarves into the secret of his ring. "I am going to disappear," he said. "I shall try to draw the spiders off. You keep together and make in the opposite direction. To the left there. That is more or less the way towards the place where we last saw the elf fires." He suddenly slipped on his ring, and to the great astonishment of the dwarves, he vanished. Soon there came the sound of "Lazy Lob" and "Addercop" from among the trees away on the right. That upset the spiders greatly, and some went off in the direction of the voice. The dwarves huddled together in a knot, and sending a shower of stones, they drove at the spiders on the left and burst through the ring. Away behind them now, the shouting and singing suddenly stopped. Things were looking very bad again, when suddenly Bilbo reappeared and charged into the astonished spiders unexpectedly from the side. "Go on, go on," he shouted. "I will do the stinging." The spiders swelled with rage and spluttered and frothed and hissed out horrible curses. But they had become mortally afraid of sting and dared not come too near. But just when Bilbo felt that he could not lift his hand for a single stroke more, the spiders suddenly gave it up and went back to their dark colony. The dwarves had come to the edge of the ring where elf fires had been. It seemed that some good magic lingered in such spots which the spiders did not like. There they lay, puffing and panting. But very soon they began to ask questions. Balin, in particular, insisted on having the Gollum story, riddles and all, told all over again, with the ring in its proper place. The light was failing as other questions were asked. Where were they, and where was their path, and where was there any food, and what were they going to do next? All of a sudden, Dwalin opened an eye and looked round at them. "Where is Thorin?" he asked. It was a terrible shock. There were only 13 of them, 12 dwarves and the hobbit. Where indeed was Thorin? They wondered what evil fate had befallen him, magic or dark monsters. Well, Thorin had been caught much faster than they had. He fell like a stone enchanted. Wood elves had captured him. In the wide world, the wood elves lingered in the twilight of our sun and moon. And in a great cave, some miles within the edge of Mirkwood on its eastern side, there lived at this time their greatest king. Before his huge doors of stone, a river ran out of the heights of the forest. The king's cave was his palace,
the strong place of his treasure, and the fortress of his people against their enemies. It was also the dungeon of his prisoners. So to the cave they dragged Thorin, not too gently, for they did not love dwarves and thought he was an enemy. In ancient days they had had wars with some of the dwarves, whom they accused of stealing their treasure. Thorin was angry at their treatment of him, and when they took their spell off him, he was determined that no word of gold or jewel should be dragged out of him. The king looked sternly on Thorin when he was brought before him, and asked him many questions. But Thorin would only say that he was starving. "Very well," said the king. "Take him away and keep him safe until he feels inclined to tell the truth, even if he waits 100 years. There in the king's dungeon, poor Thorin lay. And after he had got over his thankfulness for bread and meat and water, he began to wonder what had become of his unfortunate friends.